Welcome to You're Making It Worse. I'm Elliot Glazer.
I'm Brent Sullivan.
And I'm H. Allen Scott.
We're here. We're queer.
Meh.
Textual healing.
So I was
actually
before you start, I want to tell everyone that you can go now watch the episodes. Episodes you can watch on both Spotify and YouTube. You can go to our channel. You're Making It Worse. It's always fun if you don't want to, you know, listen to us on the podcast like you have these however many years, and you want to actually see our adorable, well lit, at least for me, faces. Wow. Then you can go to YouTube or Spotify and watch the video version of You're Making It Worse. You can also do on Patreon as well.
I actually am literally horrified that we're now recording all these things. If someone like actually ends up Googling me after I've sent them my four manicured pictures on Grindr and they see I don't look anything like those anymore, then I'm fucked. This is going to ruin my
you
sex
look,
life,
you
which is non-existent.
Have looked the same.
You've
for
looked
the past
same since the day we've met
years.
You.
Very kind. Yeah. As the hairline was down here back in
if the hairline was down there, you would have been. If the hairline was down there, you would have been an actual caveman.
Yeah. Hairline down
I
here.
I would love. Can we make that? I'm going to have someone edit a photo of Brent with his hairline right above his eyebrow.
Just find a picture of me circa 2012. So I'm excited about this conversation. I was thumbing through the Grindr subreddit recently, and I found an article on platformer.news, which sounds like a blog that Elliot would read. But the article, which was really very well written, I forgot to write down the author's name, but just go to platformer.news. The article detailed a number of fairly disturbing prospective campaigns that Grindr is reported to be considering to boost profits. According to Platformer, Grindr is about to engage in a campaign to monetize the app more vigorously. Proposals include putting previously free features behind a paywall, makes sense, rolling out new features, makes sense, and working on an AI chatbot that can engage in sexually explicit conversations with users. In December, Grindr announced a partnership with XHuman, a startup that makes customizable chatbots, including an AI girlfriend and an AI dating coach. Grindr's initial plan was to build an AI wingman to help people navigate the gay dating scene. It might suggest a restaurant to take a date or music to play after they come over, according to CEO George Arison. Quote, we can help them write those messages to save time, and we can understand who they are better through all those messages. Grindr is currently revising its terms of service to ask people explicitly if the company can train its AI models on their personal data. Now, before we break down and have a chat about this, the information that they wean from this personal data will likely be used to train another paid product, an AI boyfriend that can sext, flirt, and maintain an ongoing relationship with paid users. The AI boyfriend is in the early stages of development, according to employees with direct knowledge of the project. Yeah. So obviously, you know, this is just, you know, this isn't mainstream news necessarily, but let's have a conversation about what it could mean taken at face value. How these iterations could play out.
Ooh, I'm so confused. I'm a little like,
Not, I mean, many aspects of what is being described has already happened on many platforms and is happening currently on many platforms. And before I get into like my thoughts about it, fundamentally the AI boyfriend or whatever it is a similar thing that happens on Snapchat. And it's also kind of an iteration of like an Ask Jeeves or the little paperclip member back in the day, like the little paperclip on Microsoft or whatever, where it learns your behaviors of how you communicate and use the app. And then of course it offers you suggestions on then how you can better use the app or things you can do. And so it's like another glorified personalized because of the way you use the product or the app or whatever it might be. It gives you options, or it also can be a way to kill time or to do funny things or like whatever it might be. It's essentially an Ask Jeeves, an interactive Ask Jeeves in a lot of ways.
So I guess that's the question. How does this supposed AI boyfriend manifest? Do users know they're chatting with it or not? Alan, you're implying it's basically the paperclip on the, you know,
well,
a Microsoft Word that
I'm not implying that, Brent. I'm saying that this is a version of what it could be. Now, everything you shared does not tell us how they're planning on using it and making it part of their product. But that's how many platforms are using it as a.
Sure.
And that's the larger conversation in AI. There's a lot of fear about AI and what it could do and replacing jobs and all of these things. However, there's also a lot of, and I do think this part of it is something that often gets lost in the conversation, the exciting possibilities of AI when it is implied in a personal request-driven process. So meaning that it's not taking over something, it's not doing a person's job, it is a tool in which like what you were saying about, you know, this AI thing suggesting music to play or restaurant to go to and making those suggestions based on things that you have previously communicated about or searched for, I think that's actually a good thing. I think that's a helpful way of Googling, if you will.
So I don't have personally, I don't have any problem with an enhancement that is providing me additional options. Now, we'll take that to its natural conclusion because there was I did want to bring up this point. There was talk about how an AI could help you write better questions and better prompts to people that you send. Mm-hmm. And I think I've had plenty of chats in my life on Grindr in which I think the person I'm chatting with could use some assistance in how to communicate properly and more respectfully. That said, I do think there's a world in which you're setting yourself up for disappointment because if someone is incapable interpersonally is needs an AI chatbot to help communicate with you over Grindr, it's possible that in person they'll be even more disappointing than what you're expecting.
It's almost like they're not acknowledging that Grindr is like most like heavily for sex. I mean, obviously it serves other purposes too, but it's like predominantly about sex and hookups and stuff. And talking about like needing musical recommendations I don't understand.
It was so that was one of my notes was just, I mean, the absurdity to me of like, you know, of meeting with someone and thinking, you know, that guy was a really great guy. I loved having sex with him, but it's a real shame he only played Mumford and Sons while we were hooking up. I guess I'll never see him again. But
think about the flip side of that too. I get what you're saying that like, you know, it's just another way of using essentially all doctored photos or old photos of yourself and then being disappointed when you meet the person in person. But that also, I do also think that there are a lot of people who struggle with how to communicate in particular ways, and having an assist to suggest certain language or options or directions or things to go, I don't necessarily think is a bad thing because, again, its purpose is user initiated. It's not enforced because of some robot. It's not writing a message for you. It's suggesting a different version. It's no different than the whole like that app on Google Docs or whatever, the Grammarly thing that gives you a different version of how you can write a sentence.
Yeah.
I see it in that way. But then again, like the flip side of it is that this is a big company and their bottom line is to make money from the app in which they have. And they're coming up with all these different ways in which, and users will sometimes buy into it. And that's where I think the danger comes from, because then it's unregulated. It's not, to me, I'm like,
right.
Let Congress pass a law that says this is all you have to accept into this, that, and you have to make it clear that what you're accepting into and that it has to be regulated by the user and not by the company enforcing it on the user and all these different things. And we just have no laws on it right now.
Grindr also is not, it also feels somewhat like a monopoly. Like, yes, there are other, you know, similar apps, obviously, that cater to different groups of queer people. But Grindr is inherently like, the unfortunately the gold standard, I would say.
Yeah.
So it's strange. Well, you know, I don't know, it's very strange to me.
that was one of the thoughts that I had, which was it's just absolutely shocking, I think, in our era of pop culture that things tend to kind of shift and evolve very, I think, a lot faster than they used to. Mm-hmm. And it is shocking to me that Grindr is still unequivocally the preeminent spot.
Right. Right.
Despite some other apps coming and going, it is still the preeminent app that people, that the LGBT community uses. And
the same thing's happening with social media, with retail apps, et cetera, that the primary players for the past 10 years have been in social media, three different companies. You know, it's been Facebook, well, Facebook with Instagram, so they're the same company, and then Twitter, formerly Twitter, now X, and then Snapchat. And just like with retailers, the major ones are Amazon and Walmart. And that hasn't changed for the past 10 years. And so we really, with the exception of rules of like TikTok, for example, but I think TikTok's more of a blip than it is actually one of the apps that are probably going to last for years and years to come. But it's, we don't actually change, I think, as much as we think we are, because we've seen progress go so quickly in the past 20, 30 years. But if you really think about it, the four networks are still the four major networks. The major retailers are still the major retailers. You know what I mean? Like, we actually don't accept change so quickly, I don't think.
No, that's a perfectly fair point. I did. There were a couple interesting things that I wanted to. I found a CNBC article that said that only 7% of Grindr users actually pay, which is well below the industry-wide average of 15%. And I also was fascinated by this. So, Alan, you touched upon this. There's a larger debate that's happening, a little bit less so with Grindr, but with apps are with other dating apps, in that apps are incentivized to keep users from meeting a match for as long as possible, so to maximize their revenue. And there's actually a lawsuit now against Match Group, which I think is an interesting one, which a group of users argued in a complaint that, quote, Match intentionally designs the platforms with addictive, game-like design features, which lock users into a perpetual pay-to-play loop that prioritizes corporate profits over its marketing promises and customers' relationship
goals. It's
almost
like we've been saying this for the past 5 to 8 years.
Well, and that's what I mean by regulation. And that's also what I mean by, like, when I tell people, like, vote the people locally and you know, in your state that represent you and your values. Because if you keep just voting in the same goddamn people who are ancient and who have been in there and have no idea what any of this shit is, well, then what purpose is that serving? It's like we need people in there who can actually regulate some of these things and start the conversations so that dangerous practices like intentionally brainwashing someone to be on a particular app and use it a particular way actually becomes illegal, in which you have to set up clear ways that, just like with me with reporting, I have to tell someone I'm recording this now. There are consent laws. There are things out there that people that, and those came from regulations because of Congress. And it's like, this isn't hard to do.
Well, let me just tell you this. For once, I agree with Alan.
Wow.
That was your soundbite for the day.
Not even joking.
Mini traditions on our podcast. Traditions only on my behest.
It's only a Brent Sullivan Zoom tradition, and I love it.
That is correct. Only at my behest.
We are joined today by a good friend of ours, a new friend for Brent, a friend of Elliot and a mine, Liam Garrow. Hello, Liam.
Hi, everyone. How are we? How's it going?
So let me just set up this a little bit for all of our. We have a diverse listener population. I do know this. There is just as many women as there are homosexual men listening to this podcast.
And those would be the only two.
Yes, those are the only two, actually. Maybe three straight men.
My dad listens.
That's true. Your dad is an honorary homosexual in kind of a fun
way.
He's
the one with the rainbow sticker on his car, not me. So.
That's true. So he's definitely an honorary homosexual. But I want to say for all of our listeners, Liam, so people probably have seen you many times because your videos of, I mean, you interview so many of the gay comedians in the world, and you've also guested on many of the podcasts. So people have definitely seen you chatting on the various queer podcast network. If
oh,
you will.
I hope so. I hope
the scene, so. If you will.
Yeah, the new scene. It used to be clubs and bars in the 80s, and now when we talk about the scene, it's mostly it's breakout rooms in like Teams work calls and also Riverside.
Well, you host a podcast that both Elliot, we love this too. This is also a tradition on this podcast that Elliot and I have done podcasts that Brent has not done.
Yes, that's right.
And
very
and
long
so
tradition. You rich host history.
You host a rich history of a podcast called Tell Me Everything.
I
that
do.
Is fantastic and delightful. Tell us, like, how did Tell Me Everything start for you?
Well, I want to stir the pot a little bit more because, sure. First of all, H. Allen, you're the only one who's been on the show, and I want to say something right now to Elliot and Brent. You will never be on the show, okay?
Wait, I thought Elliot had done it. Wow.
No,
wow.
No,
am I
no.
the I'm the
you're the unicorn.
One
you're the
wow.
unicorn. This show came to be because I had previously done another show ahead of this one called Deep Feels, which was just like a much more sort of like looser interview style type show, also with, you know, actors, comedians, what have you. And then I was sort of working with this producer. They were like, hey, we like this idea, but do you have anything else? And I was like, well, I've always had this one idea for basically like adult show and tell. Because mm-hmm. to me, it's always very fun. And I think we're all very accustomed to this. Like there tends to be, especially amongst like gatherings of gay men, like if you're at someone's house, there's always inevitably a moment when the conversation does come to a bit of a standstill. All the gossip has been shared. Any sort of personal revelations have been unearthed. And then there comes a point where someone hooks up to maybe like a Bluetooth speaker and or screen. And someone says, let me show you this thing that I'm obsessing over right now. Yes. And I was like, I basically want to do that, but in a show. And so the whole conceit is that this is really just like adult show and tell. So a guest will come on and they bring their favorite, you know, people, places, things from the, you know, sort of art, pop culture umbrella. And then they just get to be like, let me tell you why I love it so much and why it means so much to me.
Well, I want to say, because I asked that question first, because one of my favorite things that when we all, the three of us get together at each other's apartments, whatever it is, no matter what
rarely
happens.
Rarely mine. Go ahead.
It is rarely yours because, I mean, you live above a very scary Taco Bell down in downtown Los Angeles.
And really, there's no such thing as a non-scary Taco Bell. Let's
that's
be
true.
So for
that's
real.
True.
You know,
that's
yeah.
true. But what happens, and this is what I find so loving about your podcast, is that it's exactly what the three of us do. At the end of the night, after everything has been done, we've watched the thing we got together to watch. We had the snacks on the table. We did all the things. We go to the things and we rewatch the YouTube clips or things that we have been obsessing over as a friendship for the past 20 years, or we make fun of, we intentionally get Elliot to show us his YouTube history, which is so vulnerable.
That's so fun.
And it was so fun to see.
A lot of Chaka Khan.
A lot. Well, there was also, also some male content on there that was very fun to make fun of as well.
Yeah.
Male content?
There was, yes, because I don't know what it was, but you preface this by saying that you were so shocked by this person who does like underwear reviews. He's such like a thought or something.
Oh.
And he does underwear reviews.
Like, you're like, how did the algorithm pick that up? And we're like, well, I think we know how.
It's so funny.
Well, I mean, let's be real. I mean, in that scenario, it's like, that's just my astonishment at like the internet. At a certain point, like reviewing underwear, I get like lost in where we are as a
culture, as a people.
Yeah.
Can I throw this out and then I want to get into some specifics, Alan? That was a great preamble. I was at a birthday party many years ago. We were up in Ojai, California, a bunch of good friends all together, and we decided to finish the evening that night by watching some of our favorite YouTube clips.
Yeah.
To this day, I gave three right off the bat to get the ball rolling. And I will never forget one of my friends, beloved friend of the podcast, Jamie Lee. She looked at me and she goes, Brent, your YouTube videos are really good. And I am still strutting around downtown Los Angeles like I am. Like my
you
shit don't
are
stay.
Good at YouTube,
it feels
which is
really good.
I will
Thank
say
you.
That about you, Brent. You do find deep cuts on YouTube that, for someone who hates the algorithm and social media as much as you do, you really excel in discovering some oftentimes disturbing YouTube.
Yes,
content.
I mean he also like what's amazing is he doesn't have like radar for queer things. He doesn't have. He didn't know who Lizzo was until last year. But his YouTube rabbit holes.
Oh my god!
2023.
Even though I met her, I guess.
You did, yes.
And then, well, because then you were like, "Oh wait, you mean my dear close personal friend Melissa?" Yeah, no, I know her.
But even so, his rabbit holes on YouTube go to places that are his version of camp. You know, yeah. They're still campy, yeah. But they're in his lane, which is like,
yeah.
Not. It's a little gay, but it's usually just weird.
Yeah. Yeah.
But thank you guys. That said, Liam, let's bring it back to you. What's your go-to? When you're looking to impress a, you know, a friend or whatever, what do you show people?
Okay. I do have some go-tos, not surprisingly. One thing that you should know about me, and this is also just by the way, what I'm about to mention, this isn't even supposed to be here. This is not here for a prop. This is not because, like, I had something demonstrative that I wanted to show you. Because this just speaks to my level of fandom. My favorite person is Linda Ronstadt, and this is her memoir just off screen. And I want to tell you that right now. Okay.
Wow.
And one thing that I will sing the praise of really any singing star, but especially a Linda Ronstadt type, is let's talk about diversity of repertoire, shall we?
Mm.
When you talk about a person who has mastered folk, country rock, rock, American standards, traditional Mexican music,
sure.
Opera, my favorite thing to do to friends who maybe aren't as familiar with her is I will pull up a clip of her in 1977, and this is a live, because she was like, there was some strange sort of pseudo hybrid concert film and also narrative movie that came out in 1978 called FM. And it was about like the boom of, you know, American radio, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so they have Linda Ronstadt in the movie singing three songs live that they intersperse into the film. And so one of them, she sings a cover of Rolling Stones' Tumbling Dice. And she just like rips the hell into that song in a way that is so delicious, and also has the audacity to do it while also being like the most beautiful woman on the planet.
Yeah,
just beautiful,
insane. I will show that, and then have that be immediately followed by her singing "Poor Wandering One" from the Pirates of Penzance from 1981.
Interesting.
Listen, when you've got a high soprano
with
aria,
Kevin Kline,
that's exactly right. Also, arguably one of my gay awakenings. Let's just be real,
Kevin Kline. Yes.
Kevin Kline.
100%. 100%.
Yeah. And right up there with Mandy Patinkin and Yentl. Yes.
And especially before I had my mustache, I had someone tell me that I looked like him once. And when you talk about writing a high, Brent, of the compliment from Jamie Lee, it still gives me life, that compliment.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. It means the world.
Well, let me throw this out there. I don't know much, but I know I love Linda Ronstadt. I can tell you that.
Oh, look at that. Look at that pun. That song pun.
Yeah.
That was good. That was good. Yeah. But what is so funny about that, about you bringing up Linda Ronstadt, Liam, is that, like, for most homosexuals, I feel like the average homosexuals, the West Hollywood only goes to the Abbey homosexuals. I feel like if you brought up Linda Ronstadt to them, the first place they would probably go is an American Tale somewhere out there.
Somewhere out there.
Like, sure. I feel like that is the entry.
Nothing wrong with that.
Yeah.
Beautiful ballad. There's nothing wrong with that. But also, too, and this is what separates this podcast and your podcast from other homosexual podcasts, is that we will admit that there's nothing wrong with that being your first introduction to Linda Ronstadt, but in the back of our heads, and when we get
together, we'll judge them. if we want to cut to the chase, the real response there is, if you were to present that to a sort of mainstream gay, their response would be, who?
Who?
Yeah.
They'd look like they just smelled like fresh duty on the ground. Who?
I know. Well, because, you know, the thing about Linda Ronstadt also in terms of her, like, diva gay fandom is, because here's the deal. She was sort of a rare example of, like, a female singer. Here's what it was. In a way, and bear with me, she kind of was the original blueprint for a Whitney Houston. Let me explain this. When you talk about someone who has that thing where it's like, girls want to be like her, men want to be with her, that kind of thing, right? And then also, incredible voice, right? But, you know, Linda, as a female artist, had a sort of kind of novel aspect to her fandom because, like, she wasn't just banking on women and gay guys being into her. Like, she had the world falling in love with her and had very, like, very, 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 like, horny straight men well, that were happening. Like,
the
I've
governor
seen
of California.
Famously her long-term boyfriend, yes, Jerry Brown.
Yeah.
Very right. real. And, like, I have seen, like, this is also my deep fandom. I have, like, downloaded bootlegged copies of live recordings of her concerts from, like, 1977, the early 80s and stuff. I don't know that I can emphasize, like, I think you hear a lot about, like, when you see, like, girls screaming for, like, boys on stage, like, you have a sense of what that's like. Hearing adult, primal, testosterone-driven men screaming for a woman on stage is such a specific sound.
Mm. Yes.
And, like, that, so that's why I think she doesn't necessarily fall into the gay fandom world, because she sort of, like, that was never really her niche.
Yeah. Yeah.
Definitely not.
But she has that. She does have a Dolly Parton, and she's collaborated with Dolly many times.
Yeah,
she does have a Dolly-esque component to her in that...
She's a sex kitten.
She's a sex kitten, but also the fact that even her involvement with Jerry Brown told you, okay, well, this woman's not conservative. This woman is going to be on my side. This woman's going to be okay with me and party.
I was actually going to tell you, if you remember, Linda Ronstadt... got in trouble in the lead up to the war in Iraq, I believe.
Because 2004,
she gave,
yes.
2004, yeah. She gave at one of her concerts in Vegas. She said she was anti-war and she got booed. And I love the idea.
It's more specific than that. It's more specific than that. Remember, it was because she was encouraging everyone. She wanted everyone to go and see Michael Moore's movie Fahrenheit 9/11.
Oh, sure. All right.
And that's what it was.
I love the idea of a bunch of, like, you know, inbred hicks from the Midwest at a concert hall in Vegas watching Linda Ronstadt being like, Linda Ronstadt's liberal.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, wait, you know,
Liam, we got to move on from Linda Ronstadt. I hate to do it, but please, I do want to do something from the, take a little something from your podcast. And Linda is one example, but you ask your guests to come with three examples of something and pop culture that's either particularly gay to you or that you're obsessing over or that you just want to do a deep dive on. And so you've done Linda.
Yes.
I want to know two other examples of things, and it can be from even not even now, it can be from any time, of things that you're obsessing over.
I mean, I will say, in keeping with the thread of something we mentioned earlier, this idea of a sexual awakening, I will say, and maybe this is an indication as to why I grew my mustache, but like a Magnum PI era Tom Selleck is so formative to me sexually.
Interesting.
And I couldn't, here's the deal. That show did reruns at A&E when I was a child. The school bell for me rang at 2:45, and if I hoofed it, it was exactly a 15-minute walk to my house, which was crucial because that meant that I would walk through the front door at 3 p.m. to then turn on A&E to catch said rerun of Magnum PI.
Sure.
And I couldn't tell you why it was important to me at the time, but it was imperative I watch Tom Selleck walk down a beach.
We know exactly why.
I needed that.
I have to add to, actually, if I may, like,
please.
Sometimes we talk about how when it comes to like the gay masculine ideal, it often feels like it was sort of created in the 90s, I guess, like the abs and like a sort of a lean muscular body. And yet it's nice to see, you know, it's interesting to think about Tom Selleck or a Burt Reynolds and Perry, but like these, you know, these, even JFK Jr., like men who weren't, they didn't look like bodybuilders or they didn't look like,
Steve Gutenberg.
Steve Gutenberg. I think it was very handsome.
Same. But there was, there's all, it's like, yes, they're all handsome, but there's almost like an everyman quality about them too.
Yes.
Totally. You know, they probably wear practical underwear. Like, just they're not wearing expensive to exist Hanes. Or anything like that. Yeah. It's Hanes.
To exist. Steve Gutenberg wearing to exist is honestly the campaign that I would honestly.
But I have to say, and this is something that I think you and I talked about this on your podcast, but Tom Selleck, I'm into the Tom Selleck aesthetic of that moment for you and that Spank Bank material. But I will say Tom Selleck is forever dead to me because Rosie Donald told me so.
I knew this was going to happen. I knew we were going to go here.
Yeah. Well, you know what? Actually, I'm remembering we did have this conversation. And I want to say, too, he is like a very rare example of a person who I can turn off my brain to a part of them. I very seldom am able to do that with people, but
yeah.
Here's what's very interesting to me about Tom Selleck, because of course this is what you're alluding to, is the whole NRA debacle.
Yes.
He of course was like a spokesperson for them and sat on the board for many, many years. And interestingly, a few years ago, on his own volition, he very quietly stepped down from the board.
Oh.
Without any fanfare, and he just sort of went away.
That's...
And I find this is interesting because if memory serves, and I hope I'm not rewriting history, I think he also was doing it when there was like a real reckoning in your country around conversations pertaining to gun violence.
I'm going to say too that if
But all I was going to say, I wonder if like an element of that was maybe him being like, oh wait, maybe this is bad. Maybe I should really leave.
You have a sweet Canadian heart, and we'll talk about that. But I do want to tell you that he only stopped doing that because he got that sort of remortgage home loans commercial deal, and he knew it was going to be bad for him if he kept that.
I want to also add again, not to revise history, but I've gone back and watched that clip of Rosie and Tom, the most awkward conversation in I guess Rosie history, and she kind of started it. Like,
well, of course she did.
Kind of started it.
I don't think she denies that either. Of course she did.
And also, Rosie's also looked back on that and has, like, for as much as she's like, "Hey, I agree with my I obviously stand by my feelings, and I think that was an important conversation." Even she now looks back on that and is like, "That was in no way the forum for that conversation."
Yeah, it was, and I think he tried to handle it quite delicately, you know, like get it back to the movie. But
she told me to hate him, and I hate him.
It's Rosie, and it's the Columbine era, and so I understand why she couldn't contain herself.
Well, yeah, you can hate Tom Selleck, and I will continue to hate Susan Sarandon. But Liam, let's get to Canada. I want to talk about Canada.
Before we get there, he has one more.
Yeah.
I'll make this one short and sweet. And you know what? It actually dovetails perfectly, Brent, into you wanting to talk about Canada, because you know what I love about Canada? Free healthcare. I love universal healthcare.
Yes.
I will sometimes just walk into a hospital because I feel like it. Mm-hmm. If I have an afternoon to kill, you know,
check out the gloves, the supply.
You know, I will pull aside a nurse who is very clearly at capacity and overworked and underpaid, and I will say, "One second, can you look at this nothing on my hand?" And she goes, "Listen, I can, but you will need to wait 4.5 hours." And I'm like, "You know what? That is the trade-off, isn't it?
Yeah.
That is the trade-off.
That is the trade-off. Yeah. That is the trade-off."
Yeah,
that
is
so funny. I love it.
Wait, Liam, where are you located in Canada?
I'm just north of you, so you are all LA folk, and I'm in Vancouver.
Oh, nice.
I know, a real snappy 2.5 hour plane ride.
I think the listeners of our podcast know this by now, but I love Canada. I visited Canada. I've been to Halifax. I've been to St. John's, Newfoundland. I really want to go to Calgary. I love...
No, you don't, but okay.
Yeah. Is it boring? What's Calgary like?
Let me break down Calgary. Mm-hmm. Calgary is... It's Canada's Florida without none of the fun stuff.
Yeah.
Oh, interesting. Why do you say that? Like, do you mean politically?
Politically, for sure. I mean, Alberta also happens to be, so you have states, we call them provinces. It's a province that is also incredibly affluent because there's a lot of oil money there.
Right.
But it's like, you know, at least in Florida, you're like, all right, well, we have Miami. You know what I mean? Like, let's go to the beach. And then you're like, but then in Alberta, it's like, well, we're in Alberta. What do you want to go do? Let's go walk a flat mile to, like, you know, fucking A&W. You know, like, that
is your level of concern. I mean, this is me, of course, making Canada into a cartoon. But is your level of sort of, like, conservatives in Calgary, like, in Florida, they're like, I want to keep trans people from having any rights and they can't go anywhere. Whereas I feel like the Canadian conservatives like, I will still accept you and here's your health care, but I don't agree with you.
Right. Okay, so
let's agree to disagree.
I would say, here's how I often describe Canada as a general entity to Americans. Consider, like, between Canada and the United States, think of it as like two elements on a stove.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. And then at the bottom element, it's cranked up to high, and then Canada's is on like a 3.
Yeah.
So we're still being fueled by the same stuff. The intensity is just different.
Right.
So, like, when you are describing the kind of fervor that exists in your political system, does that exist here? No, not so much. But it doesn't mean that people don't think that way. And I think also a big part of why it maybe is not as prevalent an issue in Canada, you have to also keep in mind, like, it does, I think, in a way, also distill down to numbers. Like, in your country, you have 350 million people all over the country. Yeah. In Canada, and 45. we are the second largest landmass in the world, 35 million people.
Oh, 35. Wow.
35 well, million wow. people. So it's just like, even in terms of like ratios, it's like, we probably have the same ratio of people who think that trans people aren't real. But yeah. because it's a much smaller number, that vocal minority really is hard to hear sometimes, thank God.
Yeah. So you heard it here first. Down with Canada. Liam said down with Canada. I'm pretty sure that was the general.
Oh, guys, maybe send me an audio pass of this before you publish, and then I'll just listen back to see if that is what I said, and then I'll sign off. And then I'll sign off on it. Yeah.
What were we gonna say, Elliot?
I want to know what it's like in the – I don't know if you're in a partnership or a relationship or anything, but what the gay scene is like there, the queer scene in Vancouver, what that's like.
Are they assholes like the ones here?
Let me tell you something. You could not be asking this at the more right time, because I'm going to say something. I am, after 4.5 years, newly single.
Oh. Okay. Oh, sorry to hear
no,
that.
No. Let me say this. Could not have been a better breakup.
Oh, good.
Like, we were together 4.5 years. Our breakup conversation was 2 minutes long. We finished eating dinner, and then we watched RuPaul. Still friends. It was nice. The best.
That's very Canadian breakup.
That's exactly right. Yeah. And so, but like, so I'm in this position now where I'm like, ooh, well, I've never been single in this city before. Mm-hmm. I've never been single at this age before. I've never been single in this year before. And I can tell you that in the 5 years since I was single, like, and I was a person who always previously was on dating apps and trying to, you know, hack that system. But even in the 5 years since I've been on the apps, it has all changed. And the thing that has changed now on dating apps, sex apps, whatever intersection of apps, you now have men, many of whom are already coupled, seeking their sort of open relationship fling and or their polyamorous third
partner. Happily partnered.
Happily. ENM.
In love.
ENM. You know, ethically and non-monogamous. And so I'm kind of
and
now...
horny.
And let me say this, and everyone on these apps is so horny, and I am so horny for love, you know what I mean? Like, I'm so, like, casual sex has so never been, like, a huge pull for me, because for me it only feels good if there's, like, oh, I know and like you, you know what I mean? Right. And vice versa. Yeah. So, I'm a saint, and also, I would say that I... So I'm kind of now just – so when you ask the question, like, well, what's gay culture like in Vancouver or Canada? What's – like, I'm kind of just figuring that out, because I'm also not a bar or club goer. I never have been.
Unfortunately, the three of us are very intensely into bars and clubs. So
Brent loves a tube top. He loves a nice little tube top at the bar.
Well,
arms
listen,
up.
I hope I'm not, you know, blowing up Alan's spot here, but – we had an afternoon beverage once while I was in Los Angeles,
and he knew
the bartender by name.
I did.
Alan's very social.
Alan knows everyone.
Also, we set up this on a past episode for our Patreon. We talked about this. One of Brent's favorite jokes about me, which I think I told you about this, Liam, is that I love to read in gay bars. And I showed up for our drink at the gay bar, not only knowing the bartender, the fabulous go-go in Los Angeles named Jean-Paul, but also... had a book on nuclear war in
sure
my
did.
Hand.
Right. That's right.
Yep. It definitely
and I was like, who do you
right.
think was... you are? Linda Ronstadt walking around with all those books and smarts? Come on.
Liam,
but yes,
this was...
Yeah.
Sorry. No, go ahead.
No, all I was going to say is, guys, single, ready to mingle, and have no idea what next steps I should be taking. So if you have any advice, slide into my DMs.
Well, for all of our Vancouver listeners, thank you so much for joining us. Why don't you give these listeners your handle so they can slide into those DMs?
Oh, by all means. Okay, so if you want to just keep up to date with me, I'm at Liam Garrow on all socials. If you're interested in the show, you should be sure to rate, review, and subscribe to Tell Me Everything. If you want to follow the show's handle on Instagram, it's at Tell Liam Everything. Guys, listen to the show. It's so fun.
It is so fun, and it's very much up our listeners' alley as well.
Yeah.
It's definitely our crowd, and Elliot and Brent can never do the podcast because I need to be the only one who's ever done that podcast. Just so you know, Liam.
Perfect. Liam, G-A-R-E-A-U, no X, although it sounds like there should be an X. I think there should be. Thank you.
Thank you. This is so fun.
And another thing.
So Brent and I actually recently went to a poker game, a gay poker game.
I've been wanting to go back to that, actually, too. Let me know when you go next.
I absolutely will. When we were there,
a wonderful time.
A good time. And when we were there, somebody said, you know, that room, the room that we were going to be, the table that we were going to be playing at needed a DJ because we were in a separate area. And I, of course, happy to do it. And just assumed, you know, before I could even like open my phone, that the only thing people were going to want to hear was Beyonce's new album. Cowboy Carter. And I was right. It's what everybody wanted right away. But it was really interesting. It made me think, you know, it's rare, I think, at this point, where everything is can be splintered, even with like the way we see a sort of homonormative culture, you know, the way that there are very specific like signature flagship cultural items, like we were talking about with Liam before. There aren't often these things that bring everybody together in like the gay world, so to speak. And at this poker game, it was a smaller sample size, but nevertheless, I was like, yeah, this is going to be the thing. And everybody had thoughts.
It does seem polarizing. I experienced that too when it came out as well. Yeah.
Did you? Now you're someone who doesn't care about music, but I'm wondering, what did all of you think, or I guess both of you think, about Cowboy Carter? Do you care? Did you care? How do you feel?
Well, I mean, so when it came out, I remember Naomi was on her way over here. It was Michael, myself, and Naomi
Watts.
And, yeah, Naomi Watts, Academy Award nominated actress Naomi Watts was on her way over. And I put it on while everyone was here because I assumed, I mean, I know Naomi, she performs a lot.
Oh, you assumed. All right, go ahead.
I didn't make it about that, but go ahead. No, but I assumed, because I know she's performed to Beyonce before, that you know, we would want to listen to this. And both Michael and Naomi did not really dig it. They weren't really feeling it. And I was actually kind of feeling it. I mean, I don't care about music, and I could not listen to it tomorrow or forever, and I would be fine. But people were like, when I tell people that I like it, they're like, oh, you're going to buy this? You're going to buy that? I'm like, no, I'm not. I'm listening to it on the thing that I buy to stream things and listen to it once a week, and then I'm done.
Buy what?
Buy this shit on the website that like the record,
the shirt, or
I don't know, the things, you know, the things to rep the whatever,
some merch.
But I did find myself really enjoying it. I enjoy the Miley song. I enjoy that Yo-Yo song. There are songs on it that I'm like, and in a weird way, because another part of your question that I think we'll get to is like, I come from Missouri, but there's a really strong country music flair. My mom listens to country music, and I grew up listening to country music, Dolly Parton. So like, the country music was always a big, big part of my upbringing in terms of what my mom listened to, because it's just what the default. It was that or oldies. Those were the two things that they listened to.
Yeah.
And so, and I think in some way, I kind of got excited over somebody taking country music and like fucking it up a little bit. Like
subverting
like,
it.
Subverting it in a way that you don't see often. You saw it with the Dixie, or you saw it with the Chicks now. And you saw it kind of with Shania Twain a little bit. Like you saw like some of it being subverted a little bit, but not like how Beyonce's doing it.
No.
You know, I think this has seeped out in the past. I support Beyonce. I like Beyonce. Beyonce is a good friend.
Beyonce's like, thank you, Brent. Thank you for supporting me.
But I don't care deeply about Beyonce. There's what was her last hit? She had Say My Name, I think. I think that was her most recent hit. And that said, I actually was intrigued by this. And when you started playing it, Elliot, at poker, I liked a couple of the songs. I don't know if they're iPod Nano worthy, but I liked them. That said, I just happen to have a visceral reaction against anything that large groups of people are glomming onto. And
a visceral reaction to things that people like en masse. I usually just veer away from anything that people like in a group.
It's true. But I'm doing that with this now because it seems to be sort of a breakout album of the last several years, I would say, for the gay community. And so I'm trying to tamp that down a bit myself. That said, I actually think I will listen through and if I'm interested, I will download a song on iTunes.
That's exciting. Do you so you don't stream? For your iPod Nano, you have to pay and download and pay.
Yeah,
that's that's remarkable because you're so frugal, and so to see
a dollar, every song's a dollar.
Right, but when you stream music, like you don't really have to pay.
But you do because. It all depends on how much music you listen to.
Right.
On average, as you guys know, I have very particular music tastes. So I probably download if that 50 songs a year. So that's $50. So if I joined any streaming service, it would actually be a waste of my money.
I want to go back to the time that you sat down and you thought, how many songs do I actually listen to in a year? Like how, and then you do the economic math of, well, if it's 50 songs that I buy in a year, that doesn't come out to the $10 a year that it would be for Apple Plus or whatever the subscription is. I want that moment. I want it documented. That's our drunk history.
Look, that moment is running through my head at all times, Alan. I'm always crunching numbers, baby.
And I say with love, there is a distinctly like neurodivergent approach to having an iPod Nano in 2024 where you have to click the wheel so you can go back to the same seconds of a kiss the girls cover by Bare Naked Ladies or whatever that you've discovered recently.
All right, I'll leave it at that.
I love it.
I know I'm an anomaly because maybe once a year I'll be somewhere at the gym or in my building on the elevator and someone will see my Nano and freak out. And oh my God, I can't believe anyone still owns these. I get it. That said, as someone who is a little aggressive with how they manipulate music while listening, because you know sometimes it takes 25 songs to find the one I'm in the mood to listen to, I can't believe that the touchscreen is as popular as it is because you can't do it without looking. When I have my music open and I click through 25 songs before I find the right one, if you look away, your finger slips and you're no longer hitting the fast forward button to get to a new song after, you know, a couple seconds. It's just inherent because the screen is all just a blank glass. You don't know where it is. Whereas on that wheel, on that beautiful iPod Nano wheel, you always know where your finger is. So you can listen to music aggressively, as I call it, without having to look down. And I know that's not how everyone listens to music, but I can't believe that everyone is actually...
I feel like I always know where my finger is going to be... Like, it's a metaphor for Brent Sullivan in a way that I can't quite put my finger on quite yet, but I know where his finger is. Wait, no, Brent, do you like country music, though?
I do. I very much like country music,
Wait,
I do
enjoy the chicks. Wait. Hold on. This is why I like the Beyoncé album, because I have no... Country music sort of enters my ear and then exits. I don't hear
That's
it.
Interesting, because you're so...
I mean, what I call like corporate country music, the sort of mainstream, all the country album artists that sound the same. And I know that sounds very close-minded, but there is sort of this like Red Solo Cup, you know, don't come in our town, whatever the fuck that song is, stay at our town. That very distinct, indistinct, big country sound. But then there are artists whom I love, like Chris Stapleton or obviously Dolly Parton, even Reba, people who feel that they have more artistry to me. And that's what, and I love Beyonce's album because it really does seem to subvert it a little bit. And it's also more than a country. It's so much more than a country
it is
album,
more than a country.
But I understand. It became the narrative, but I love it. I love the album. But Brent, what country music do you like?
I like a lot of it. I like the Chicks. I like Johnny Cash. I like George Jones. I like Bonnie Raitt.
Bonnie Raitt.
Bonnie's not country, though.
And I
she's
say,
more jazz, I would say.
Right? No, she's more blues, blue, rock and blues.
Blues, yeah.
Hmm. Interesting. And yeah, I'm gonna
he's furious
withhold,
now.
I'm
he's
gonna withhold
furious.
Judgment on that. But yeah, I mean, and you know, a little bit of a lot of like modern. I like Kacey Musgraves, which
love
I think would probably Mace fall
Musgraves.
Underneath
Musgraves.
She's
fall
great.
Underneath like you know a pop. Country,
I don't know.
I like
Kacey.
Her.
Kacey Musgraves to me. I mean, I like Kacey Musgraves a lot. I do enjoy her, but I also feel like she's kind of like Lana Del Rey in the fact that they always kind of sound like they're either whispering or they're depressed in a way. They're just sort of
no,
like
not Kacey.
And then I go to the store.
No, no,
and
no.
I have a few that I go to.
No, 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 no.
I'm just like, can you belt one fucking song for me?
No,
can you just
that,
yell
that's her,
one
that's
thing.
That's her tone.
I don't
that's
care
her
about
tone.
Her fucking tone. You know she you can do more. If Queen Latifah can do more, she can do more.
You're not asking Dido to belt. You're not asking.
I am asking Dido to belt. I want all of them to belt.
You know what? I support that, Alan. I say follow your arrow.
Oh, that's
put
a song
my
by,
on it.
Another,
by Kacey Musgraves.
Kacey Musgraves song, yeah.
Very good.
Not as famous as Don't Know Much, but you know, they got two in.
Don't Know Much. Two.
Don't Know Much.
What would your aunt say?
Brent, what would your Aunt Ramona say about something she heard on today's show?
Linda Ronstadt and the Dixie Chicks, two musical artists. I bulldozed their albums for political reasons. Long-winded deep cut there, guys. Long-winded deep cut. What can I say?
My Aunt Joanne would say, Linda Ronstadt seems progressive, but I have feelings that she might be anti-Semitic. I just feel that way. How about Aunt Anne?
Aunt Anne would say, I didn't know that Grinder was so sophisticated. Now I'm worried that my pepper grinder is watching me with AI. Should I hide it? Should I put tinfoil over it? I don't know what to do.
Tinfoil over it. Well, thank you so much for listening, everyone. I am Brent Sullivan. Good night. No.
I love Elliot trying to get his name in
no.
there.
We end with
That's
me.
It's a good end.
Oh, God, I'm sweating.